When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week on Bruh Meets World.
So when I think of like Boy Meets World or my relationship with Full House, I definitely go back and I watch shows and I'm like, oh man, that's weird. We wouldn't do that now. And it's good that we wouldn't do that now. It shows that we're like maturing as a society, maybe being a little kinder, maybe being a little nicer, maybe we're more understanding. But that doesn't take away the personal significance something has to us. And we also don't have to, we're not doomed to repeat mistakes of the past or the changing values that are happening. So I think we can hold space for a personal love we have for something and also not do it again today for something that's clearly outdated. When this boy meets
world. What up, bruhs?
What up, bruhs?
And welcome to Bruh Meets World.
Bruh Meets World.
Your Boy Meets World fan cast. I'm Siege.
I'm Tony Coitus. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I'm doing surprisingly well, considering all the things that are going on in the world. But I'm really excited about this episode this week. If you remember back in season 4, which I know most of you are with because you're listening to Pod Meets World, we interviewed with a director or an upcoming director at the time named Sav Rogers, who gave us their opinion on the episode Chick Like Me. And Sav has since gone on to release their movie, which they were working on, and has graciously agreed to join us after all of their success and coverage. I don't know. I'm excited to talk to Sav, especially considering that this episode comes out right before our What a Drag episode. Tell me, where are you at?
It's a full circle moment. You know, this is going to be a little bit different an episode than our normal episodes, but it's been really great to catch up with Sav. He's been going through so much over the last few years with his movie premiering at all these festivals, and he's just getting so much recognition for it that, you know, starting with Chick Like Me and now with What a Drag, it feels like a good moment to just circle back with Sav, see what he's up to, see what's going on, and, you know, maybe get some of his thoughts on, you know, some of these other things that we've been talking about.
Absolutely. Before we get into that interview, as always, want to thank you guys for reaching out to us at Bruh Meets World. If you have any comments or anything that you want to say about this episode or future episodes, reach out to us at bruhmeetsworld@gmail.com or at bruhmeetsworld on all the places. You guys who have been on YouTube, we love your comments. You guys who have been on Instagram, we love your comments. Reddit, all
you
the places.
You guys who have been waiting outside of my apartment with binoculars. I don't love it. Stop, please. Too far.
He's Boundaries. Lying. He wouldn't have mentioned it if he didn't see you and enjoyed it. We appreciate you guys. If you're listening to this on Spotify or all of the other platforms, hit subscribe. If you are listening to this on your phone, give us a rating. And with that, having done all of those things, I think it's time that we talk about our guest today. Sav Rogers is the filmmaker and screenwriter whose featured directorial debut was Chasing Amy, a Tribeca Films official selection, I believe, 2023, explores the complicated legacy of Chasing Amy, 1997, and its profound impression on his life. The TED Talk he gave in 2018 kickstarted this filmmaking journey and spurred the writing of scripts that center around highly specific, surprising stories about queer people. His screenplays have been recognized by GLAAD, Outfest, Screencraft, among many others. Named Forbes 30 Under 30 media list in 2024, Sav is also the founder and executive director of the Transgender Film Center, a nonprofit aiming to help trans creators bring finished film to audience around the world. You may remember him from our season 4 recap, Chick Like Me. Please welcome back to the show, Sav Rogers.
Yay!
What's up? Hello.
By the way, I never get that right in like just one fell read, so
you did great, my friend. It's a mouthful. I was like, if this is helpful, here's some information about me. I did not expect you to read it.
No, absolutely. I love like just like the accomplishments that you had. T, I'll let you start off.
Yeah. I mean, all of this is impressive as shit. We're so happy to have you on. You know, we last spoke to you in July of 2020, a different time, a different world for us, and I'm sure you. Yeah. How has your life changed these last 4 years? What have you been up to? What has been happening?
It's weird to think. Wow, almost 4 years since we did that. That is wild. Life is very different in a lot of ways and very much the same in other ways. We still use Zoom as our primary mode of communication for podcasts. That is still the same. Good to know.
Technology has not improved.
Yeah. I'm like, can't we do better than Zoom? Like, don't they have the right... if you look at their user agreement, it's horrifying. My right to privacy brain is like very much on with Zoom.
Technically, they own all of this.
Right, exactly. I'm just like, that's wild. We need to figure something else out. What happened, Skype? Like, you really fumbled the bag. You had a, you know.
We use Skype there as a verb to hop on the Zoom.
That's, there you go. Yeah, I mean, life's different in a lot of ways. I have not watched much more Boy Meets World since then. I've watched a lot of Full House since then. That was like my comfort show growing up. And, you know, life is stressful. And so like whenever I'm like in a time of like, I need to reconnect to the thing that made me want to do this kind of stuff, I go back and I watch like the stuff that made me happy as a kid. So a lot of Full House lately. You know, Chasing Amy has come out. It was just like a thing I was working on back when we did this. Yes, we did premiere at Tribeca, which was amazing. We've been all over the world with the movie. And you know, the Transgender Film Center was not a thing that had been started yet. It was something that we were talking about starting, but it was not a thing yet when we did the last interview. So life's different and fun, and at the same time, you know, it's still you know, getting to talk with your friends about stuff that you like. That's a good thing.
Absolutely. That's so great. I have to say, like, so proud of you, so amazed at the final work. I got to actually see the film at Outfest LA last year. And it's one thing to like have a friend who created work and art and you want to go and support their art. It's another thing when that art is good. And to like see, I like remember going over to a friend of the pod, Chris Lordy, and being like, this is good. Like it's like really good. And we really enjoyed it. And I was blown away by the movie, which turns out to be a journey of like self-discovery for you, but also a love story for how you met and ended up getting engaged to your wife. What was it like sharing such a vulnerable story with the world?
You know, it's just now occurring to me that the subtitle of Chasing Amy could be Boy Meets World, because that's very much the journey that I go on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot. I mean, so for anybody who hasn't seen Chasing Amy, the premise of the movie is that I start making a documentary about Kevin Smith's 1997 cult classic, Chasing Amy, and its impact on the LGBTQ community. That was the premise I was interested in exploring. And as the documentary goes on, it becomes my life story in a lot of ways. And it, as I am trying to talk about the things I'm there to talk about, which is, you know, basically the LGBTQ community's reaction to Chasing Amy and what that says about film, cinema, LGBTQ people, what makes good representation or bad representation, what it becomes is my coming of age as an adult against the backdrop of making a documentary about Chasing Amy. So it becomes this like meta thing. That also like gets into my real life love story with my wife, Riley. And spoiler alert, it works out in the end for me. That's great. And I say that because like a lot of people, like they'll come out of the screening and be like, I'm so glad you two made it, because they're not used to seeing trans people end up like happy. And so like, it's usually such a bummer. And I'm like, oh man, I hope that this isn't something that's still radical in 20 years when, you know, some annoying kid comes to my door and says, hey, can I make a documentary about your movie? You know, if it does that well. But yeah, I mean, it was weird because, you know, I didn't want to be in the movie at all. And I conceded to being in it a little bit, which is why we had coverage of me to work with in the final edit. But I don't really seek that kind of attention. I'm not an actor. I'm not interested in being on camera generally, you know, but I love talking about work and the things that are really interesting to me, including Chasing Amy. And it became very apparent to everybody but me while we were making it that it was going to be my life story. And so I'm just really thankful to have good collaborators who were able to talk some sense into me, because the movie I wanted to make was not the most interesting version of the movie. And we ended up with something that was really sincere and heartfelt and lovely, even if that was really difficult to navigate in post-production, because it's one thing to be in a movie that you're anticipating being in, but if you're not anticipating being in it all that much, it becomes a lot harder, especially if you transition in the middle of making the movie. And you know, you're preserving moments that are embarrassing, or a version of yourself that you wouldn't want people to remember forever. So yeah, I mean, it's been cool, but it's definitely, and it's also interesting when people come up to you afterwards and like tell you about your life, like you weren't there, or, which, you know, is something that I had talked about with Kevin Smith, was like, hey, does this happen to you a lot? And he's like, all the time. It's hilarious. And like, now I'm in that position of like, oh yeah, no, I was there. I lived it. Thank you. And it's funny, you know, how full circle everything is, including being back here.
Absolutely. Sure, it's sure. So funny that you say that, because in reality, you had talked about like, if someone comes and asks you a question about the work that you've done, since we've had our last conversation, Pod Meets World kind of existed and we got invited on. And so now we're covering our episodes of the episodes that we covered. And it is like this whole inception thing. So you joke, but I can absolutely see you. So chasing Amy.
God, I mean, let's hope not.
Well, yeah, you'll need the podcast companion piece. So.
Oh God. Podcasting's a great idea in theory for me, but I'm like, oh, is it good for me to have an archive of every time I thought I was a smart guy? Probably not.
Honestly, we regret it consistently.
Looking back, we're like, oh, you know, I had thoughts. You know, sometimes I stand by them, and sometimes I'm like, maybe I was a little cranky that day. I needed a sandwich.
You know, it's so real. You know, a lot of people will ask me like, hey, you know, so Chasing Amy, you know, how do you feel about it now? You know, that's a question that I get a lot when I'm doing press for the movie. And one of the things that I always say, but I also think is applicable here, is like, you can look at Chasing Amy and you can see how much progress has been made since then. Yeah. And you can look back on old episodes of a podcast and be, even if you're cringing, you're like, well, look at how much progress I've made since then. And you can see the growth, you know, in your own opinions. But like, most people don't see it that way. They see it as like an archive of, you thought this in 2018. That must be your opinion forever. Go fuck yourself.
It's so funny that you brought that up, because that's exactly one of the things that we wanted to talk to you about. You know, at our podcast, we kind of sometimes get criticism for maybe being too critical of Boy Meets World episodes that people loved and have great memories of. But it's kind of difficult to view something that was created in the 90s without examining the society that leads to the norms expressed through the art of that time. And, you know, you have a very similar journey of doing that throughout this movie, throughout Chasing Amy, I should say. You know,
too much.
How do you feel, like, in terms of just, like, your love for this movie? Do you feel like it gets challenged at all for the way you ask questions about it? Do you feel like there's, I don't know, any other kind of revelations that have come from your evolution of viewing this in the 90s, 2000s, and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, I stand by every frame of Chasing Amy, of, you know, it's real life, first of all. I think sometimes people will see the movie and by the way, for context, like, we are well reviewed. People have been very kind who have seen it. The number of people who have said something unkind to me, or, you know, said something weird to me, or like offered their unsolicited opinion to me after a screening has been very minimal. So when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about like very specific like Q&A instances, or some of the, like, we've had like two or three maybe bad reviews on the whole internet. And I'm like, hey, that's really good for a film that's played as much as we've played. I think some people wish that I had taken like a different approach completely artistically, or they're like, well, why didn't you do this thing that I didn't think of until I watched Chasing Amy again yesterday, right? Why didn't you ask this question that literally nobody has ever thought of before right now, right? And what I remind people is like, well, first of all, I'm a real person. And this is real life. And real life is messy. And it's often not something that you can just like put in a box. And so I think especially when we're talking about ideas of like representation or what cinema means to us, or, you know, the difficult things that we grapple with as people that nobody has like a nice clean answer to, but they expect you to have a nice clean answer to. I think that's a bit unrealistic because life is messy and it is complicated. And there's as many complicated feelings about Chasing Amy as there are positive ones or negative ones. Like, sure. You know, it all exists in the shade of gray that we call life. Right. And so, you know, when people, you know, ask like, you know, how can you love this movie? How can you appreciate it, even though it has this thing that I personally find problematic? My thought is like, well, that's my personal relationship with the movie. It's not, I'm not advocating that anything that you find difficult or problematic or homophobic or racist or anything that you can find in a piece of art that you would take objection to or find objection with. That's not an excuse for you to like not have those opinions. My opinion is independent of yours, and we can have different opinions on a piece of art because that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to make you think. It's supposed to make you respond. And so, you know, I try not to take it to heart if people are like, well, I don't agree with your opinion and I think it's horrible. And I'm like, okay, well, I think if you watch Chasing Amy, you see the process of me considering a lot of different points of view that aren't aligned with my own personal feelings. But we give space to that anyway, because my opinion is not the only one that matters. The whole point is that we collectively have this, you know, we have our own individual relationships to something, and the discourse comes from us expressing our opinions together. And it's not going to be 100% aligned. I mean, the last time I remember everybody just overwhelmingly loving a movie was like Parasite. And that is so rare that everybody's like, this is an objectively fantastic movie and we can all agree on this. And I think the same... Yeah, it's a great movie, right? And you know, maybe you don't feel that way, but you know, or we're all aligned. No, but so when I think of like Boy Meets World or my relationship with Full House, I definitely go back and I watch shows and I'm like, oh man, that's weird. We wouldn't do that now. And it's good that we wouldn't do that now. It shows that we're like maturing as a society, maybe being a little kinder, maybe being a little nicer, maybe we're more understanding. But that doesn't take away the personal significance something has to us. And we also don't have to, we're not doomed to repeat mistakes of the past or the changing values that are happening. So I think we can hold space for a personal love we have for something and also not do it again today for something that's clearly outdated. But yes. I don't think that the purpose of movies or television is that everything lasts the test of time and everything holds up perfectly. And I'm trying to predict the future all at once. Like, ideally, as artists or as viewers, we can learn from something, we can grow from something, we can say, don't love that. And then we can take that and apply that to something new, whether that's what we show our kids, whether that's what we decide to make as artists, or what we're reacting to in a rewatch podcast. Like, it's like, I don't love that, but that's okay. Like, it's done. I had nothing to do with it. This is my opinion on it now, and we're gonna all live.
Yeah. I love everything that you said. It's so amazing because like we really agree with you. And it's funny because, as you said, our work kind of reflects your work in different mediums. But this idea of, hey, I just wanted to explore something that I loved as a kid and coming back and looking at it. And when I uncovered that, just much like I would anything that I wrote as a kid, I'm like, oh, I don't necessarily agree with that anymore, or I would behave differently. But in making Chasing Amy, you were able to meet Kevin Smith. You were able to meet Ben Affleck, which is like its whole other thing. And it's so many other people who were involved. And very similarly, we've met many of the cast and writers of Boy Meets World. And one thing that Danielle asks every time we're on, she's like, have we ruined the show for you? And we're like, no, I mean, like you haven't, you can't. But that being said, you did have a moment with Joey Lauren Adams where, again, it's one of my favorite parts of the movie where she is like, I like that it helped you, but it was actually a really hard movie for me. And behind the scenes, there were all these things going on, Harvey Weinstein, there were lots of kind of personal things that she was going through. And it really is a moment of being like, oh, I enjoyed this, but that, like my enjoyment is something that is a painful memory for you. What is that even like to like be confronted with that?
So first of all, I really want to hear, I mean, I know y'all are interviewing me, but I want to hear a lot of stories about when you go.
We'll go. Trust.
I'm excited to see, and I have my own like weird writer strong story now. I don't know if I've mentioned it to you. I got invited to his like pasta party.
You got invited to the pasta party?
I did. It was the most competitive game of charades I've ever witnessed in my life. Pasta was great. I basically met Alex Barreto, writer's wife, in Bay City, Michigan, when we were both there for the Hell's Half Mile Film Festival. And so we met like the opening night. It was really fun. And she had mentioned like offhandedly that she had like this pasta party and stuff like that. And I had no idea that she was married to a writer or anything like that. I was like, oh, cool. And then like later in the festival, like I found that out and everything like that. And she told me about like her life. And I was like, oh, this is fascinating. This is like, how do you accidentally run into, you know, like this very small world? Because I immediately thought of you guys with the podcast. But then I was at Sundance this year and I like Alex invited me and I was like, oh, this is fun. And I thought it was going to be like an intimate like dinner party vibe. And I was like, okay, like, it's okay if I bring a plus one. And she's like, sure, whatever. I get there. It's a fucking rager of a house party with competitive, so much pasta, very competitive charades. And I was like, I was not prepared for this whatsoever. And also like, there were like real actors who were there playing charades. I was feeling the altitude. I was like, oh my, I have to like step my game up because I've embarrassed myself at the charades party. So anyway, writer Alex, you have a wonderful party. Thanks for inviting me.
It is so incredible that you shared that story with us because they were just talking about it on their podcast. And I think our listeners will actually love to know that you were at the famed pasta party.
I want to say, yeah, it's infamous so now. Like they just brought it up and they were just giving the details. So for you to go, I'm like, it makes so much sense. Like even like the timelines, like I knew you guys were in the similar place at the same time.
Yeah.
But like knowing that you got, oh, we're going to ask you behind the scenes stories about the pasta party, because it is like that thing where I kind of feel like outside the party looking in, just be like, I want to know.
Just go to Sundance. Just go to Sundance. You have the in.
It's true.
But It's Sundance is a lot of money for not a lot of unless you're going like for a specific purpose, and the pasta party could be your purpose. But I bet you, I think you know a guy who could get you an invite there.
Very good point.
This is possible.
But back to your question. Yeah, I mean, in the interview, you can kind of see it all over my face and how I feel when I'm in the Joey interview. And for the audience's context, yeah, I interviewed Joey Lauren Adams. She graciously agreed to be interviewed for the movie. And so effectively, like, we went over to her house. You know, the day before, we had done a joint interview with Joey and Kevin. And it was all pretty hunky-dory for the most part. I consider that, like, the peak of the production for me was like, oh, my God, we did this interview. It was great. I was basically not even in the room. They were just, like, talking to each other the whole time. I was like, this is great. This is great stuff, right? And we go over to her house the next day, which she let us film in, which was very kind of her. And, you know, Joey, she clearly had some thoughts about, you know, my approach to the questions, which is valid, by the way. Like, I'm a documentarian there asking questions about a movie she was in 25 years ago. She did not have to agree to an interview. She did not have to, you know, like any of it. She didn't have to invite us into her home. Like, she was very kind to do all of this and give us her time. But yeah, I mean, I think that from my perspective, I think the interview brought up some feelings about things that maybe she hadn't thought about in a long time. And she was very direct and pointed in her thoughts and revealing, you know, like the struggles that she went through during the period of time in which they were making Chasing Amy and afterwards, and basically talking about the horrific experiences that she and a lot of other actresses in the 90s dealt with, specifically under the, you know, the reign of terror of Harvey Weinstein. Mm-hmm. And that was real shit, you know? I think she says that. She says, yeah, that's some new shit for you. Like, and I think when anybody offers you feedback, it's a gift. And that's how I feel about that Joey interview, that she gave me the gift of honesty and truth. And she did not have to. She said, I just couldn't do another bullshit Chasing Amy interview, quote unquote, or I'm paraphrasing. And I'm thankful that she didn't, and that she trusted me and our crew with that truth. And so that definitely changed the course of not only my life and the movie, but also my perspective of holding on really tightly to what Chasing Amy meant to me as a 12-year-old who needed a life raft. And it showed me it was okay to let go a little bit. And now I am able to, I think, move forward in my life a lot more because I don't feel reliant on the crutch of Chasing Amy being like a central part of my identity as a cinephile. Yeah. And, you know, now I have this new piece of work that is a byproduct of Joey's interview and Kevin's interview and their time and Guinevere Turner and, you know, Riley participating and me being able to go out there with my story. And, you know, it's a really powerful moment in the movie where, God, we talked about structure forever with the edit, because the interview with Joey is so compelling and so good because she's so honest and direct. And the note that I would get a lot of the time was like, is there any way we can like move it up in the edit? And I said, no, because the structure of the film is that you're following my journey, making the documentary. And so it's kind of like, you know, act two leading into act three moment is that interview with Joey. And it is a long segment, and it is, you know, you can feel the tension. You can feel how difficult it is. And, you know, every time I'm in a movie theater and I watch people watch it, they're shifting uncomfortably, you know, they're feeling what it felt like in that moment of like being confronted with an inconvenient truth that my fandom was not everybody's experience with that film. And so I just want to say, like, I'm so thankful to Joey for being real in that moment. It has definitely shaped my life moving forward and, you know, seeking, you know, different kinds of authenticity. But also I think challenging my perspective as a filmmaker. I'm just grateful to Joey for that. So thanks, Joey.
I love that, especially as you said, challenging your perspective as a filmmaker, because that's another thing as you're creating. And again, like, I think one of the things that we have in common is we're fans reviewing work as fans. But if you become a creator whose job is to be a fan, it becomes like this really mixed and nuanced relationship that you have with both the work and the cast and everything else.
Well, how do you manage that? I'm curious. Like, I only have my experience, but like, I'm curious because your work is quite similar in that vein. Like, how do you balance your rapport with the cast of Boy Meets World, along with, you know, being able to critique it and also like have real conversations about it? Because, you know, most of them were kids when they were doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things is we have, you know, we already were ahead of them. So like some things like we have foresight on, and some things like they're answering questions that we, you know, already had. So it's like, oh, you're answering the questions that we had. So this is fantastic. But in other ways, TC and I have had lots of conversations, especially after the first time we did it, where we were like, okay, we have to be more than just fans. And, you know, like our fans would want us to be authentic and ask the questions that we would ask. So if it's all a praise fest and we like, we've never had any problems with anything you've ever done, then it's not going to feel or seem real. However, if we go in there and we're like, hey, we hated everything and we also feel like this was trash or whatever, they're not going to be receptive, and they're not going to share with us and understand that we are approaching this as fans who just want good art in the world. And that line has been hard, but I think, at least for me, a huge part of that is being honest to myself as a fan. What would I ask? What would I want as a person of color, as a gay man, and not backing away from those things, even though it may make them uncomfortable. But at the exact same time, to your point, realizing that they're people And that they, you know, like there were certain things that they're not going to have answers to because they were children. And there are other things that they have a different relationship now looking back because they were children. And when they look back, they're like, whoa, you know?
I was going to say, yeah, it makes a big difference that they're also doing a podcast where they're basically asking these same questions, having these same conversations. It validates a lot of the things that we were saying like 5-6 years ago when we were like talking, we were like, oh yeah, we talked about that same thing. So it feels good that they're kind of having that same experience. I say it probably gets a little more awkward for me when we're talking to the writers who are actually like, it was their ideas. Cause like, it's just one thing to talk to a kid about like a play they did when they were 13, essentially. You know, like you shot an episode of television and never thought about it again. But for the writers who are actually putting the sweat into it to break those stories that we have issues with, that's where it's like, oh, it's a little bit more uncomfortable. But like Siege was saying, like you kind of have to have a mixture of appreciation while also like giving critiques that make sense. Like the questions that we have about Boy Meets World are critiques that like any reasonable person would wonder why Topanga didn't go to Yale. Like these aren't things that are revolutionary. So you know, I feel like we don't have a lot of I don't know. I don't feel a lot of pressure, I guess, to sound a certain way or to appease anything. But it, you know, I think realizing that people worked on this, that the people that we grew up watching on our TV are just that, they're people, they're humans. And I think now having a relationship with them outside of the television screen has really made me kind of shift the way I kind of view all celebrities and the way I kind of view all filmmakers. And like, everyone's just people. And it just kind of humanizes everyone, I think.
To me, sometimes I feel like that is even the point of like, when fans disagree with what we're saying, or when like we have fans who are like, I love this episode and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's good. We're not saying that you can't watch it. We're saying we had notes, we had points, we had things that we disagree with. We've had writers come up here and be like, I wrote this episode and I thought it was good. And we're like, that's allowed. You know, it's, I didn't spend 20 hours or 40 hours in a writer's room coming up with it. I literally watched it for the content that I thought it was. And I had notes. I thought things could have been different or better. And when I look at that, anyone who would get defensive, anyone who would get angry, I'm like, chances are you're not really angry at what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You are feeling challenged in your own belief system. And that's outside of me. My job is literally just to show you that there is another perspective, that there is another point of view. And if you have a different one, that's great. Because as we were talking about, hearing the different perspectives from the different people involved have really helped me understand my own perspective.
So I love what you're saying. And it just like, I think that there's this false idea that if we love something, we have to love every part of it. We have to overlook anything that makes us uncomfortable, any critiques that we might have. And I'm also not a person that's like, hey, if you love something, pick it apart to death. Like, that's also not my bag, you know? But in the same way that we love people who are deeply flawed, in the same way that we have friends who might have qualities that we don't like sometimes, we have family members of like, I love you to death, but I wish you wouldn't say this thing, or you make me feel bad sometimes, whatever. Like, nothing under the sun is perfect, right? And so this idea that if we critique something, well, then we must hate it and we're fake and, you know, we're dragging it down. It's like, well, if you love something enough to invest the time and the energy into considering what doesn't work for you, I mean, that's an investment, you know, not just like mentally, but emotionally. And I think that's what the best like film critics do. The best film critics aren't just like, this was bad and you should have done X, Y, or Z. And it's like this like pedantic kind of thing that's like talking down to the filmmakers or to the audience or anything like that. I think the best work contextualizes it in a broader sense for people to understand and to engage with and then to make up their own minds about. Those are the critics that I really enjoy reading. Those are the critics who's, you know, when they review my work, it makes me feel really good, even if they don't love every part of it. But it's like, I'm the filmmaker. I stand by the thing that I made. And maybe in 10 years, there'll be another perspective to consider. Because guess what? The world has evolved and changed. And maybe my thinking has changed. And that's a good thing. I think it's like deeply intellectually dishonest, this idea that the things we love have no flaws. And like, that's
well,
it.
Well, you critiquing, like, or even just considering Chase and Amy to the degree that you have, has not just opened up like all of these questions about the movie, but questions about yourself. And I think that's kind of what we're thinking about. It's like, it's always more than what you're saying it is. Like, if you're taking this personally, it's for another reason. But even asking those questions to yourself might reveal things to you that you may have otherwise didn't consider, just because you were looking at a piece of art that resonated with you or struck you a certain way that made you ask those questions.
Yeah. T and I haven't talked about this yet, but I watched the movie American Fiction.
Oh, I can't wait to watch this movie.
I'm gonna tell you. I watched it with my husband, who is white. I shouldn't have done it because I needed like to just watch that by myself and kind of like take it in. But I'll say that movie was so challenging for me to watch, because while different people have different reactions, different people can be like, it's great, I feel like we need it. Other people are like, I don't know if we need this type of storytelling, whatever. I thought it did a lot of things. I thought it was like really well done for what it wanted to do. I did not like the way it made me feel. And I had to like ask myself what that was about. And a lot of it was just harsh truths. There were lots of things where I'm like, I didn't want to go to the movie and have to sit with this and think about this. Does that mean that movie shouldn't exist? No, that movie is probably important for a lot of people. It's probably going to affect me in ways that I didn't want and wasn't ready to change. But watching it, I can't say that I enjoyed myself. I can only say that I just sat with it and I was like, yeah, that exists, you know?
As somebody who does not even know the log line of this movie, because I am so behind on Oscar season, it's not even funny. So apologies, there are so many movies I haven't watched. I haven't seen Poor Things. I think I've only seen May, December. Like, I think that's the only like Best Picture nomination. Oh, I guess Barbie. I saw Barbie when it came out, you know, whatever. Barbenheimer, Summer. I get a pass for that. But I mean... just hearing that, though, it makes me, one, want to watch the movie and engage with it, knowing that you had that reaction, even if it wasn't like, this is the greatest movie of all time and it made me feel amazing about myself. It's like, oh, it challenged my friend CJ at this level of like, oh, like, he's uncomfortable, like, let's investigate. But also, not every movie or TV show has the same purpose. So a sitcom from the 90s and early aughts is not going to have the same, you know, impression probably as a movie like American Fiction or Chasing Amy or Chasing Amy or whatever. Like, all of these things have different purposes. The overlap is like, we extract the meaning that is important to us. You know, each viewing experience is so subjective to the person. You know, you can have 10 people in a room and have 20 different reactions to something, 30 different reactions if it's a very divisive movie. And I think that that's a beautiful thing, and we shouldn't shy away from critique or, you know, watching things that feel problematic, you know, and just engaging with, because art is supposed to help us figure out and contextualize the world around us, make it make sense, figure out a way to live with ourselves and it, you know?
You know, we're talking a lot about how, you know, art is valued. Your movie premiered at Tribeca Film Festival in 2023 was the official selection of Outfest LA 2023, Image Out 2023, Film Out San Diego 2023. How does it feel to have your work valued in a positive way, knowing that the art that you make is actually connecting to people, and maybe the way you anticipate it, maybe in ways you didn't anticipate? Like, what's that been like?
It's amazing, honestly. It's all I wanted my whole life, was to make a movie that people responded to like this. And the overwhelming response that we get at film festivals is tears, hugs. I'm so happy it worked out for you. You know, it's that. It's like, can you talk to my students? Can you do X, Y, or Z? And I'm like, oh my God, like, this is all I've ever wanted. Now, it happening in such a short period of time, like, definitely felt overwhelming. And so I was really glad I had the holidays to kind of like decompress, because I'm just like, okay, my life is changing and it's happening the way I want it to, with the exception of, you know, the independent documentary market being in absolute shambles, because we're still not picked up. We still haven't been purchased anywhere, which is, you know, I know. We don't have distribution yet, which is wild to me, because like we're getting all of these amazing responses. So we're still playing film festivals, and we're, you know, rep by CAA, and we're, you know, pushing for a deal and everything like that. But, you know, it's wonderful and can be overwhelming if you don't like take care of yourself, because now I understand a lot better about what Joey was talking about in the interview to me, of like your response is your own. You know, I had my own experiences making Chasing Amy that aren't in the documentary. You know, sometimes I don't know how to feel, you know, watching in a part of the movie that makes me feel uncomfortable or something like that. Sometimes I have to really consider like, well, I put my life out there for public consumption and I have to deal with the consequences of that. Right. Yeah. And so 99% of me feels so thankful, so grateful, so happy that it's gotten the reaction it has. And then the other like 1% of me is like, oh, like this exists forever in public now, you know? Yeah. and that's not something I ever wanted for myself, but I chose to make the best version of the movie versus a version of the movie that would have afforded me like a little more privacy. And I chose to put the art before myself in that way. And I'm figuring out how to live with that, especially as we try to release it wider. And that's kind of where things are, but for the most part, it's the best, you know, it's a dream come true. I got to make my dream movie and people by and large have reacted the way that I hoped that they would. And now it's just about trying to get the sale to make sure that it can really connect with people on the level that I really always dreamed of. And then figuring out how do you live with the consequences of that?
You know, sure. It's really interesting because I think you are, hitting on something that I wasn't prepared to talk to you about, but like now that you've brought it up, this idea of you've made great, like I said, I watched it. I was 100% touched. I was like, this needs to be seen by everyone and all this other stuff. And the idea that it's like gotten all these reviews, it's been the official selection of so many things, and you're still like, haven't gotten picked up, don't have a distributor. It's very interesting because TC and I have had like our own brand of success and our own recognition and being published and being, you know, getting accolades and award nominated and all these things. And you're like, yeah, so like someone will go to buy me, right? And they're like, ooh, the industry has changed. And I feel like, A, as millennials, this idea of constantly chasing and like an ever-changing world where you're just like, hey, all right, I did the things that I was supposed to do. I'll be rewarded, right? And they're like, ooh, that was last week. This week, brand new rules. None of that applies. And then also the idea of I made something that is getting recognition. So I thought that success would lead to a different form of success. And instead, it's all different. Hollywood's all different. The industry and media is all different. Like, what has that been like, just that journey?
Yeah, I mean, we'll get real on the pod.
Yeah,
that's what we do.
We'll get fucking real. I don't know if someone will get mad at me for saying this, but like, and by people, I mean, you know, people who want me to stick to my messaging. But like, you know, I was laid off in September. So we'll go through the last year of my life in some change, right?
Yeah.
January 2023, we find out we get into Tribeca. They've had the movie for a week and a half, and they're like, fuck yeah, like, or 2 weeks maybe. And they're like, hey, we want to offer you a slot. We were over the moon. We had 6 months of lead time before our premiere to plan and do everything that we needed to do. And we accomplished most of that, I think. But we really just had more time to like tighten up the edit and do everything we wanted. So we get announced, I think in April that we're a Tribeca selection, April or May. And like suddenly the world is like blowing up a lot more for me. I'm getting a lot more attention. You know, I can't really say anything for like several months or whatever. But as soon as that news hits, it's like, oh my God, like, Sav, you did it. You climbed the mountain. This is great, right? And everybody, the perception from the outside is like, your life is different now. You must be rich. You must have accomplished everything you want. And I'm like, no. So we figure out a way to be in Tribeca for like 2 weeks. And we, you know, start getting other festival selections. We go to Bentonville, Arkansas. We go to, you know, Frameline in San Francisco. We go to Provincetown. We go to, we find out we're closing night at Outfest Los Angeles, the biggest film festival in LA at the time. You know, like I feel on top of the world in some aspects, but we're not getting the offers that you would have in 2019 for a similarly successful festival run, premiere, great reviews, all that stuff. And that was hard.
Yeah.
And I was on a panel with Mark Duplass at Sundance, and I promise I'm saying the name for a purpose. Yeah, I'm saying the name with a purpose, though, because he told this story that made me feel a lot better. And he said, like, the worst year of his life was after his first film premiered at Sundance, because he thought he had, like, climbed this mountain and he thought, okay, everything's solved. No, it's not actually at all. Like, it's just, it's the goalpost you have in mind. And so I'm, like, trying to figure out, okay, like, I'm in public, it's uncomfortable, like, all this shit, but, like, I still have an agency job, I have that stability, it's great. In September, I am laid off from that agency job pretty unceremoniously, and everything else in my life is going great. And I was, like, well-liked by my bosses, I think, you know, like, you know, they were really supportive of, you know, Chasing Amy, everything, and I still got laid off. It was pretty unceremonious, and it sucked. And that hit me a lot harder than I thought it would. November 28th, I'm still laid off. I get the notification I've been named a Forbes 30 under 30. Wow. I still can't get a call back for a job, you know? Like, I am overqualified for a lot of jobs, and the jobs that I'm qualified for, people who were 10 years my senior are applying for, because we're in a cost of living crisis where there's not enough jobs, because whether in the agency space or entertainment or technology or whatever fucking industry, that's where things are right now. Everything sucks for everybody.
I don't know what you're talking about. The economy is fine. I don't like.
Right. Yeah. Eggs are supposed to cost $18, right?
Right. And so everybody from the outside's like, you've had this amazing year. You played at the BFI London Film Festival. You played opening night at Kevin's Festival. You had a panel at San Diego Comic-Con. I'm like, yes, that is all great. But if you don't have a stable foundation, it doesn't feel as fun as maybe it would have if you, you know, had a reliable income. Sure. Or let's say, you know, somebody wanted to acquire your film so you could go make your next one. I think it's more likely that I'll get my next film funded before, you know, before getting like a regular 9-to-5 job again. Like, that's and that's the kind of economy that we're dealing with right now. So it's like, yeah, things are awesome and my life has changed so much and it's wonderful. And like, there's all this other stuff that people don't see, because, well, why would I post all day about, like, oh, still struggling to find a job, help me out, LOL. Like, nobody wants to hear about that. But I post about how we get into a film festival and people are like, yay. And they think your life is great from the outside, because like, social media is not real. It's all PR. So it's like, yes, things are awesome. And also it's like, some things could be better. And I'm very privileged and I'm very lucky in a lot of ways. I can sustain myself through freelance. You know, I'm not going to go broke. I'm not destitute or anything like that. But it's also like, the independent film market is in shambles, and it's been in shambles for a long time. The Kevin Smith dream of, you work at a convenience store and then the biggest independent film studio picks up your movie, that pretty much only happened for like maybe 10 people ever. Yeah. And everybody else is chasing that dream because they're like, well, that could be me. We have done everything that the industry has told us that we're supposed to do. If you want to, you know, any additional thoughts, you can read the Erica Tremblay think piece in the Hollywood Reporter about how Fancy Dance wasn't picked up despite its starring Lily Gladstone and having all of these very similar accolades, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of where things are. And it's disheartening in an industry that is so fear-based to try to like continuously pick yourself back up, especially when you're not just like a producer, you're the artist. This is your life story, actually, in the case of Chasing Amy. So it's like, we'll persevere because we have to, but it's also just like, the industry is in shambles in a lot of ways. I know we have an audience and I'm going to continuously try to prove that. And if nobody picks us up, we're going to be one hell of a case study for what you can do self-distributing. And that's the real tea.
That's so great. I love that you said that. I love that you have kind of like taken control of that narrative, in the sense of, look, I know we have an audience. Like, I know, I've seen it. And I think that in certain ways, as someone who, again, like our podcast, there was a time where like two white guys and a mic just got money thrown at them. And then like all these people of color went and they were like, hey, I have a successful podcast. And like, ooh, our money's gone. And like, you know, there's this idea of, I know that, I think it's Ayo Edebiri had gotten all her nominations. She was in so many things. I think she won her Emmy and they were like, how does it feel? And she was like, I don't know. I still can't buy a house. You know, like I'm renting. That's how I felt
so seen by that. I mean, I mean, just a gem of a human, that her I'm bisexual sketch on SNL just like had me in stitches. But like, that's real. I mean, and that's where we're at, of like the people who are being rewarded, the people who are having the best, like the time of their lives, supposedly, they can't afford to support themselves on their art alone, or they can't afford to buy a house or whatever it is. Like that's what's happening in this business as it's having this identity crisis. And so, yeah, I'm confident. I mean, CJ, you were there at Outfest LA closing night with 900 rowdy queer people at the Montalban screaming their heads off with Guinevere Turner making a fisting joke. I mean, like, I mean, there is an audience for this, and it's not just in LA. We had, you know, in Bay City, Michigan, we had, you know, queer people driving from 2 hours away to come see our movie. Like, you know, parents of queer kids and trans kids coming up after the screening to talk to me and Riley. Like, there is a real impact and it can be deeply felt. And right now we're just at film festivals, but like, I know this thing has an audience, and I feel really positive about its future, even if we have to, you know, take it to art house cinemas across the country one by one. Like, I know that there's a real audience for this thing. And you know, I wish that streamers and studios weren't so afraid right now, because you know, we've got the stats to prove that we've got a real audience here.
Absolutely. All right, so you have promised us 1 hour of your time. I'm gonna try to get us back on course and wrap this up a little bit. I do want to say Pod Meets World, as we had talked about, Pod Meets World, they're on season 4. They're about to get to Chick Like Me. And I'm saying that because be prepared for a lot of people to check out our episode, because they're going to talk about our episode.
I don't remember what I said other than, ooh, wouldn't do that today.
Well, guess what? It's going to be on Variety next week. No, I'm joking.
No. I was like, no. Like, what TC is saying is they talked about it, and it has happened. Anytime Pod Meets World says anything slightly sensational, all these articles come out. It really just happened on this past Monday. So, Pod Meets World will be in the news. Chick Like Me, undoubtedly, when they cover it, will have some kind of story attached to it. Our audience and Pod Meets World audience usually will watch as the companion piece. So, like, they'll watch their episode, then our episode. I'm letting you know the wave is coming. More people will find out about you and it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do I say anything smart in that episode? Because, God, no. I've learned so much since 2020. I might have new insights. Please let us re-record it.
I'll say that one of the things that I loved about it is that you were going through your transition at that time. And so this idea of your, like, opinions on what masculinity had taught you in that short amount of time versus what you had learned about femininity early on in life, and just this idea of presentation, you were very much an advocate for Sean's ability to explore. And we both agreed, or all three of us agreed, that it's not necessarily a storyline that we would like seen exactly as is, but it was definitely a storyline ahead of its time. It was definitely a storyline that brought up conversations that were worth having and may have allowed people, especially in the 90s, who weren't represented, to feel seen. And again, it's one of these things where it's like,
it falls under the Chasing Amy category, I guess, is what we're trying to say.
But I will say
I'm sorry.
You go first.
I just wanted to say that I remember your perspective of that episode really enlightening a lot of things for me. And I really appreciated having that unique perspective, because it wasn't things that I think me and CJ would have talked about otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited for new people to hear what Pod Meets World, to hear what the cast thinks about this episode first and foremost, but to just inevitably, like CJ was saying, to hear the response of people when they find that, rediscover our episode of it, and hear the very important conversation that I think we had about it. I think that's really going to make a difference.
I love that. I mean, you know, now, and I haven't rewatched the episode since we did that recording. I mean, Thinking back on it, I mean, it's like, it's probably nothing that you'd want to replicate today. There are ways to, you know, have sensitivity around like being nice to women that don't involve, you know, getting in what is otherwise unconvincing drag, you know, or anything like that. But it also makes me think, I've been rewatching Full House, like I said, and there is an episode where Danny and Joey are going back to their fraternity's like 10-year reunion from college. And they are sneaking into a sorority that like stole something from the fraternity. And they are, and keep in mind, it's like 1988 or 89 in San Francisco, okay? In San Francisco, and on a show where they never mention the HIV/AIDS crisis. It's almost like a little insidious that they like just go out of their way to like never meet a gay person, never meet a trans person or anything like that. But like Danny and Joey with like the worst wigs I've ever seen in my life, terrible makeup, you know, towering above all these other, like, you know, the idea of suspending your disbelief that long that like nobody's going to say something shitty to them, like for how they look. I'm just like, I get that we're in Full House logic, but like there's something about it that just doesn't sit right with me. So I'm curious like how I would feel about that episode now. But I will say again, like my opinions on it now might be different, but how I felt archived in 2020 on that opinion, it's like, well, there's opinions, you know, that can change and grow over time. And, you know, I've learned more about like trans media representation in my work at the Trans Film Center and my work, you know, watching other trans people's movies and things like that. So I'm curious like how I would feel now, but you know, Godspeed to the Boy Meets World cast revisiting that.
Luckily for you, we are about to hit the season 7 episode, I think it was called What a Drag, where Eric and Jack dress up in drag for whatever reasons. I don't know, I haven't seen it
yet. It's basically the plot for Some Like It Hot. They're trying to avoid getting beat up and they're dressed like women. It's something like that.
What's so interesting is that I feel like Some Like It Hot has aged so wonderfully.
Yes.
And I'm nobody's so curious perfect. What anything like referential to Some Like It Hot? I'm curious like how those things have aged, because it was a hat trick to pull that off. And also for this movie to continue to be like a delightful, wonderful film. I don't know. I'm so curious what you guys are going to think.
Absolutely. I was going to say, if you find yourself watching that episode of Boy Meets World and even want to send in what you think about it, just let us know. You have mentioned Full House numerous times. I cannot in good grace let you leave without letting you know or asking you if you are aware of the How Rude Tannerino's podcast.
Oh, he's pulling it up.
I'm pulling it up, baby. I just recently started listening. So let's see, what episode am I on? So first of all, I believe the same people that make Pod Meets World also make How Rude Tannerino. So I'll out myself. I am a Full House super fan, like my whole life. Ooh. Like I know so much Full House shit. I buy into, I suspend my disbelief watching it. I think that there's something like ridiculously positive from that show, actually. It's like, how to talk out like problems you're having with your family and still love them. I think it's honestly like beautiful and aspirational in some ways. And there are some things on that show that have not aged well, but that's not the purpose of Full House, to stand the test of time. But there are definitely things, especially that come out of Uncle Jesse's mouth, where I'm just like, oh my God, like that character would be reworked today. So yes, I am on Knock Yourself Out from September 11th, 2023. Season 1, Episode 7. I'm blown out on the video here, but proof that I have been listening. And I'm excited because like they're not so far ahead that like it feels like impossible catch up.
Yeah.
And it's still happening. So I'm excited to be able to get current with the show.
Absolutely. We'll let Jensen know that you have already checked it out and he's already got a fan.
Weird.
Final question for you.
Yes.
What would you want our listeners to walk away with, knowing about your time in the industry, where television's heading? And then also, what would you like? We're going to obviously plug Chasing Amy. But what would you recommend that our audience check out?
Let's see. There's so much good stuff out in the world right now. I'm going to encourage the audience to seek out films and things that they might not ordinarily consider, because it's maybe not as easy to access, but it's still worth your while. So I don't remember what I recommended last time, if you did ask for a recommendation, but I'll run through a quick list. Jordan West made a movie called Playland. It's going to be in theaters, I believe, in New York and LA later this year. It's an amazing film, an independently made film. It's archiving the history of a gay bar in Boston through like narrative and experimental techniques. It's not my usual fanfare, but Jordan is a genius and really pulls it off. And if you love Drag Race and have heard of Lady Bunny, that's a great entry point because Lady Bunny's in the movie. Let's see. There was a short that I saw at Sundance this year that I loved by somebody named Ang Field. Called Bust, and it stars Lux Pascal, who is Pedro Pascal's sister. She recently graduated from Juilliard. It is the best short film I've seen in years. I say that as a festival programmer. I say that as a filmmaker. It's a 10-minute short about a trans cop who infiltrates a trans woman's life who is trying to sell K. And it's a really compelling short film about power. So I highly recommend seeking that out. And then stuff that's available like on streaming or on Canopy, Framing Agnes is a terrific movie. If you want to hear about like the downside to trans visibility and what it means to be seen in a world that offers no protection for trans people, but kind of demands visibility. I think that's a wonderful film. And also Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. I mean, that's like the funniest movie I've ever fucking seen. And that director, Josh Greenbaum, just did a movie called Will and Harper that I had not seen yet, but it was just acquired for 8 figures by Netflix. And it's about Will Ferrell going on a road trip with his best friend who comes out as a trans woman. So I've heard wonderful things about that movie. A lot of good stuff to check out. And also How Rude Tanarito is really funny.
Perfect.
Absolutely. Saf, thank you so much. As I said, we asked for an hour. You were very gracious to give us a little bit more than that. Are so happy for your success. We're so happy that your movie came out. For those of you who haven't, please go to chasingamydoc.com to get screening information. You can follow Saf at chasingamydoc. And once again, thank you so much for joining us. We are so glad to have you here. If you have any opinions on What a Drag episode, please feel free to share them or even leave us like a little line. And we look forward to speaking with you again.
Absolutely. We had such a joy bringing you on. You're so easy to talk to. We always have to stop ourselves because we're like, hey, we could sit here and chit chat with you about movies and stuff like this for like 5 hours. So we respect you so much and thank you so much for giving us your time. And everyone, please find Chasing Amy.
Thank you both so much. Always happy to come on and talk with y'all, even if we're not recording. Like anytime you just want to gab, I'm here. But thanks so much for having me on again. And fingers crossed, I didn't say anything too embarrassing in the last episode I was on.
Absolutely. We have lots of projects that we are working on, like as our next step, and we'll have to have you part of that in some way, shape, or form. But until next time, we will speak to you later. So audiences, just so you know, in between the time we recorded with Saf and the time that we are recording this now, we have since went to the screening of Chasing Amy. Tony was able to see it with his own eyes, and we're going to talk about that for a little bit. We're going to talk about our interview, and then we're going to wrap up the episode.
I will just say, it is so much better than I even thought it could be. Like, it was such a good movie. I don't say that just because we know him or anything like that. Like, it's just truly a fantastically made documentary. I was just smiling from ear to ear the entire time.
Right.
I fell in love with obviously Sav's story, but also like made me appreciate and see Chasing Amy in a different way. Like, I kind of want to have a rewatch of that now. So it's just like it was just surprising. Like, not, you know, I had never seen anything from Sav's before this movie, and to see this as like this first work, I'm so impressed, and I can't even wait for whatever the next project's gonna be.
Absolutely. And I just want to say that we thoroughly enjoy and appreciate Saf for joining our conversations. It was fantastic to speak to them again and see just their work. And as you said, see the movie and like what their work represents. Mm-hmm. It was great for me and my husband. We went at the screening as well. And just to kind of like see that moment and then be reminded of how important Chasing Amy was in general. But what I thought was really amazing about it is we talked about it with Sav's, and there's a quote from the movie itself where it says, "I think that something can be problematic and also be formative to you as you grow up. And I think that that is kind of what we've been doing here. You know, this idea of watching something that didn't age as well as we had thought it did, but also that doesn't mean you throw it away. That means that you just hold those two things, those two ideas in your head. This was formative to me. This was important to me. And at the exact same time, this doesn't hit all the notes I thought it did as a kid.
And it's so interesting you say that because, you know, we had Sav on to do our Chick Like Me episode long before the, you know, the completed film. So to see the similarities between Sav's journey with Chasing Amy and our journey with Boy Meets World was also really interesting. I found a lot of similarities between, you know, loving something deeply, it's shaping your life, and then growing older and asking questions about it and starting to have conversations and realizing like, wow, this isn't exactly what I thought it was, but can I love it anyway? Or can I love it as something different than I did when I first saw it? Or, you know, Sav kind of talks about Chasing Amy being a life raft when, you know, days were dark, but, you know, do I still need that life raft anymore? So like, it's just really, the similarities between that movie and our podcast, I think worked out really, really beautifully.
Really beautifully. Like, it's also really funny to consider the idea that, like us, Sav has met the person who created the thing that, you know, mm-hmm. they loved, and what it's like to not only meet your heroes or meet the people who were part of it, but their own stories. The idea that what we loved may not have the same emotions or feelings to them. And this idea of not necessarily asking the people who are a part of the art that you love to hold it as near and dear as you do. Because they are people themselves. They have their own identities. They have their own lives. And I just thought that that was a very important part of that movie because it really does. I think sometimes as fans, we can lose the humanity part of the people, the human beings who helped make this. So yeah, it absolutely makes me look at Boy Meets World differently. It absolutely makes me look at all of the movies that I hold near and dear differently. And it definitely makes me look at the actors, the writers, and everyone who's been involved differently and making sure that I understand that it is a way more complex story than just the piece of media that I've consumed. But at the exact same time, that does not make its meaning to me any less special.
Sure.
Anything else you wanted to say specifically about the movie? Because I remember like having to quiet you down right before.
You know, I just the movie, I don't want to really spoil anything. And I think that's the thing is that like it's hard for me to really talk about some of the things I'm really excited about without spoiling things. The one thing I'll say is that, you know, this is no secret that Harvey Weinstein's a producer of this film. And we kind of learn a lot of like behind the scenes about this movie that kind of make you wonder.
Really quick, not this movie, not Sav's movie, but
Sav's movie, about Chasing Amy. Correct. It makes you view Chasing Amy in maybe a tainted way, in a different way. And I feel like there's so much media that recently has become that gray zone of just like, I love this song, I love this show, I love this movie, but this person who's really problematic or who did something really heinous is a part of it, gets money from it. Like, I don't know how to justify that feeling sometimes. And this movie kind of tackles that in an interesting way. Specifically with the people who were directly involved with the movie and their own accounts and like, you know, the challenges and the joys of the movie that kind of simultaneously exist. And it's just this weird kind of gray area that I don't know, I feel like a lot of media falls into.
It's so funny because the last few weeks, we had the interview a few weeks ago where we reacted to Pod Meets World's episode, their very special episode. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, Sav talks about, or not Sav, actually, Kevin Smith talks about the idea that even though he would love to think about how glorious of a ride it was with Chasing Amy being on the indie festival circuit, that was the exact same week that Rose McGowan was being attacked by Harvey Weinstein. It's because of their movie that he even had the opportunity to be in those rooms and those spaces. So yeah, it's really complex and it's really hard. And I think we are right now in a time where audiences are having to do what Hollywood is having to do, which is reckon with its past, reckon with the kind of behind the scenes of what was making all of this really great and really impactful art. Sure. And again, I think the big takeaway is not you can't look at that art, you can't touch that art, you can't discuss that art, and instead unpacking that art and condemning the things that need to be condemned.
Yeah, it's almost like the opposite of like ignoring it. Like, we have to talk about it, we have to unpack it, but that doesn't mean the art is bad. It just means it provokes conversation, which is what good art is supposed to do anyway.
Absolutely. And speaking of provoking conversation, I do want to say that since the time that we had recorded with Sav, there was also an incident with a non-binary teen named Next Benedict, who was bullied and assaulted because of their non-binary status in the state of Oklahoma and weren't protected, and they ended up dying from those injuries. And I say all of this is to say that next week we will be covering What a Drag, the episode where Eric and Jack dress up in women's clothing to avoid being bullied. Very fun, weird, subversive thing concerning how real life has progressed. But the point is, I think that movies like Savs, representation like Savs, movies like Chasing Amy, television shows like what we're about to cover next week, all of these things are really important because they do show representation. But we also have to understand that sometimes it's not just harmless fun. Sometimes it's actually harmful fun, and who is at the end of that joke. And so if next week you feel like we're coming down a little hard on it, I just want to make you understand the world and the environment and to which we will be recording that episode, because these things are, they may be good for a laugh, but what exactly was it saying? Who walks away being the punchline when we have these storylines? And I just think that's really important.
You know, to that point, I'll say, when Sav originally was on our podcast, it was for the Chick Like Me episode. And I went into the Chick Like Me episode thinking it was just going to be this ha-ha conversation. It's a little problematic or whatever. But Sav really was able to add a deeper level to that conversation. So if you enjoyed this conversation at all that we've had with Sav on this podcast, please go back and listen to our Chick Like Me episode, because I can't express enough how like interesting it was to have a perspective so different than anything I had. I could have imagined when I was watching that episode that changed it for me so drastically. And now I look at that episode differently. It's not a bad episode. It's just a different episode now. And I just wanted to say, like, please go back and check out that episode.
Absolutely. And we want to thank you guys for consistently supporting us and following us. If you enjoyed this episode, please check out Sav's documentary at Chasing Amy Doc. That's on all the places, all the socials. Make sure that you tag them when you do watch it so that I know you have your support. Again, that would be chasingamydoc.com as well if you want to check out where there are screenings. It's not currently listed anywhere on streaming, but it is in the festival circuit and they are touring. So make sure that you check that out when you have a chance. If you're in the future listening to this, hopefully it is on a streaming service somewhere where you can access it, because art like this is very important. We are adding perspectives, we are adding conversations, and we really appreciate you guys for supporting them and supporting us. And speaking, if you would like to continue to support us, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/brumbeatsworld, or reach out to us and have these conversations. You guys have been really good at writing to us. We have some of your letters. I will address them, I promise. So just know that we were reading those. I'll probably at sometime in the next few episodes just kind of read out your messages, and we'll have those conversations. But you can reach out to us at brummeatsworld or email us at brummeatsworld@gmail.com. Tony, anything else you would like to say?
No, just a big thank you again to Sav for joining us, and check out Chasing Amy whenever you get a chance.
Absolutely. All right, thanks you guys so much. Don't forget to leave us a rating, to subscribe, and if you're going to do all those things, continue to dream,
continue to try,
and do good.
Do some damn good. Later, boys. Later, bros. This episode of Brumbeats World was edited by TC. This episode of Brad Meets World was produced by Siege and edited by Tony Curtis. Brad Meets World is a Two Free Tokens media production.
Bye.
Bye.